Everybody, we're talking with the Info Warrior, Jason Bermas. We talked to him about a month ago when, maybe a little bit longer, when this whole coronavirus was ramping up. But now it seems to have leveled off a bit, and it seems like we're smack dab in the new normal. What's been going on with you, Jason? What are you working on these days?
Working on getting out of New York State. That's going to be my number one priority. Hopefully leaving in the first week of June. I don't know. It might be a little bit of a challenge because the DMVs here are closed, and my local one has now been closed forever. In fact, my local town held an emergency board meeting where they laid off 59 people, and that's just going to be the start of it. Once the college doesn't come back here, my community is going to be completely eviscerated. So it's time to jump state. I'm going to states that were the least locked down and areas around them. And I plan on streaming like 3 to 7 times a day, talking to people and hopefully showing people the other America, the one that's not based in fear and medical martial law and being dictated to by billionaires.
You know, Arizona's pretty good on the laws. Where are you thinking about going?
Right now, my short list is possibly around Dayton, Ohio, then maybe somewhere around Kansas City, Missouri, or the Ozarks in Missouri, Madison, Wisconsin. They flipped the script pretty quickly. Then you got South and North Dakota. South Dakota didn't really even shut down at all.
Right, yeah.
For me, a lot of people were like, oh, the winters are bitter there. You're not going to know anybody. I'm like, I don't really care. At least they didn't shut down.
Right.
So if I find like a nice little place there, I think that's probably where I'm going to go. But we'll see. That's why I'm going on this trip, and I'm going to, like, you know, spend a few days in each place. I'm going to film there, and I'm going to try to make a decision and basically be gone by whatchamacallit, by September 1st, hopefully.
So you think there's going to be a big exodus from the cities? You think people are going to?
Yeah, the city, man. There's going to be a huge exodus from the state. Uh-huh. You can't just print out of nowhere, and then on top of that, say you're going to reimagine education. Reimagining education in my area takes 6,000 to 8,000 residents away every single year. On top of that, you canceled basically all baseball tourism, which was the other smaller economy here. So a town like this that's based in booze, coffee, pizza, and Chinese food shops by local businesses, it's never going to survive. On top of that, you know, they are furloughing nurses in this area. Otsego County hasn't been massively hit by this thing. So when they're done furloughing them, they're going to fire them. And I just don't see much of a way out of this. There's so many people now that have been comfortable that were in non-essential jobs that were making more on unemployment than they were working, and they don't want to go back to work. They've sold a large section of the populace on this idea of a universal basic income. I'm sure you're going to see a mass exodus from the city. I would say a lot of those people may remain in state and buy up upstate. But I see a lot of people in upstate New York, which is the vast majority of New York, leaving the state and maybe the coast altogether.
Wow. Yeah, I definitely think that there's, like you mentioned, the jobs, people going on unemployment. And I watched a video the other day, and people are making more money on unemployment than they would if they went back to work, you know. So what do you think that's going to look like with the job sector, where with the minimum wage? This is something I was looking at. It's like, do you think that's going to make or what do you think is going to happen, like, when they pull that plug on the unemployment bonuses?
Again, it's so hard. What's it going to look like when people have to pay their back rent because
right.
their landlord had to pay their mortgages? What's it going to look like when New York doesn't get the $61.8 billion that Cuomo is saying is going to be needed to even sustain what we have now, or cut 20% of the workforce in law enforcement, in health, and in education? It's going to look catastrophic, and they've already printed a ton of money out of nowhere, basically signing over more notes to the Federal Reserve, which isn't federal at all. It's basically a pseudo-government agency that's more like a private institution.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're going to continue their track, trace, database control grid. They're already telling you what they're going to do. I mean, this is one of the reasons I'm leaving the state. They're going to have Bill and Melinda Gates reimagine education here. They're going to have Eric Schmidt come in and reimagine the city. And this is the guy that wrote with Jared Cohen, The New Digital Age, Reshaping the Future of People, Nations, and Businesses. Very dystopic book, my friend. I don't want to be a part of that. And on top of all of that, you have Michael Bloomberg heading up the Track Trace Force. I never thought that me talking about a track trace database society would now become like a slogan of the government minus the database, and instead you put core on the end of it. The Track Trace Core. If you're out of a job, come on over. We'll give you benefits. You'll get things you won't. This state is a disaster right now, and it's about to get catastrophic. The income of New York and California for the rest of the country also is huge. I think, you know, you're going to have to see a lot of pushback for this not to be just catastrophic, not just for the states I talk about, but for the country in general.
So, Jason, when sorry, Paul just talked in my ear, just distracted me a little bit. But I had a couple questions on standby here. One of the questions was with New York, like, having such a high number of cases, right? It was like totally like per person. It was like outside of like the scope compared to almost every other state. And the numbers are off the charts. So I see what they're doing is they're rolling out these agendas. Now, we never thought really so much about the contact tracing. We've been looking at these types of things, you know, how they want to crash the economy and how they want to it seems like that some of this stuff, obviously, you didn't think about what they would do, but it all fits into their game plan. Do you think because I've been a big commenter on how the numbers have been blown out of proportion and they've reported cases that weren't necessarily true COVID cases. Do you think so that's part of their plan is to use New York as a way to roll out this new normal in a much more, like you said, dystopian type of way where they're coming in hard there and they're prototyping the agenda there in New York because it had such a high number? It's just part of their plan.
Well, I think they're definitely exploiting the numbers, if that's what you mean, to do this. I mean, the emergency acts that Cuomo was putting out there that essentially made natural disasters or even cyber attacks on the scale of this, right? Yeah, of course they are. And I think the very real fear because of the vast amount of breakouts there, and I think that the numbers, I mean, we'll see at the end of the day. I don't think that they exploited the numbers as much in New York as people think they do. You got to understand, most of them were in the city, which is a very, very small geographical area compared to the rest of the state. That and Long Island are tiny compared to the massive state that is New York. And, you know, they didn't test everybody. And there's so many problems with the tests anyway. I mean, I've got these my own personal stories about my cousin and my ex-girlfriend down there. And, you know, one basically goes in for testing in the beginning after she begs for three times to get a test in the beginning of March. She's never been this sick. Finally, they give her a test. She says they say she's negative. They say she had pneumonia. She's never had pneumonia in her life. She's not obese. She doesn't have any pre-existing. She got through it. Then she gets a call 2 weeks later. They have her come to the Bear Mountain testing facility. All the internet is jammed. All the radios are jammed. She doesn't feel sick at all. They test her there. She comes back positive for the virus. They quarantine her for 14 days. Then a week later, they test her at Vassar for the antibodies. She doesn't have any antibodies. Okay. Then you go to my ex. They never test her. She's showing all the symptoms. She lost her taste, her smell for over a week. She had the slight fever, the headaches. They end up testing her for antibodies and she's got them. So, you know, and now they're saying the antibodies don't even protect you. I think more and more when you look at this thing, it looks like a bioweapon. Like I've said from the very beginning, when you saw the Lancet study, the studies out of India, the Nobel Prize winner from 2008 who discovered HIV saying the HIV sequence had to be inserted. And, you know, I think when you do something like this, everybody's like, oh, if this is a bioweapon, it's the worst bioweapon ever. Why? It had the grand effect globally. It got a large populace to be induced in fear and accept controls that they never would have otherwise, except being locked down in their homes and shutting down their businesses. And the biggest losers in this are going to be the middle class, the cash-based businesses. You know, they've already demonized cash in most cases. Think about the bar businesses after this. That's the last stage in New York. Then they're going to say you can only be at such a capacity. And I wouldn't be surprised if they outlawed cash transactions in a bar because cash is filthy and too many people will touch it. And no matter how many masks you wear, everybody's going to touch the recirculated fives and ones from the register. So that way they can tack 100%. All right. That's what this is. This is gutting the average businessman that's been able to work around the system and have his own cash-based businesses and stay kind of off-grid for the most part. They've never wanted a strong middle class, and these are the final death blows of that middle class.
So contact tracing, what do you know about that? What do you think is going to happen with, like you mentioned before, that they're going to be hiring these people to do this contact tracing? Can you, and just if you're just joining us, we're talking with Jason Burmis, we're talking about the COVID crisis here. He's in New York, and the contact tracing, Jason, what do you think, what do you think that's going to develop into? What's your thoughts on that?
I mean, it's already going. Yeah. It's not like it's they're talking about it. They're hiring 17,000 people. They've started the program. Cuomo put on TV, I think 3 days ago, on one of his press conferences that I covered it. If you get a call from NYS contact tracing, answer that call. And if I get a call from them, I'm going to bitch them out and be like, you're the new snitch squad. Don't come near me. You have no rights. I don't want to hear who you think is infected and why you think you need to contact me, because I've been in contact with somebody who has been infected. It's the new Stasi squad. You know, they can just say anybody was infected, and then all of a sudden you have to be quarantined and they can't do something for 2 weeks. This is going to be out of control. All right. So, you know, they have social distancing squads. You see what they've done in Thailand. They've hired Spot, the DARPA Boston Dynamics robot that will come up to you and tell you to socially distance. But again, it's all arbitrary. See, in the United States, you have to stay 6 feet away. In Thailand, it's only 3 feet away, you know? So the goalpost continues to move. It really is about control, but even more so, it's about medical martial law, not allowing you to decide how you want to be treated if you have this thing. And by the way, your husband, your wife, your brother, your sister, your mother or father, they don't get to come into the hospital with you. And if it gets bad, they don't get to speak for you. So if you want hydroxychloroquine, you might not get that choice. If you want intravenous vitamin C treatment and steroids, you might not get that choice. That's an even scarier aspect of this. But then they want you to believe that some magical vaccine is going to save us all, when even something like the flu vaccine admittedly doesn't work on a bunch of people. I mean, give me a break. It's as subversive and dystopian as it gets, and it's not being pushed by people that we've elected. It's being pushed by globalist organizations like the World Health Organization, the United Nations, these supposed philanthropic organizations like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, things like the Rockefeller Foundation before them. And people need to wake up. You know, there is a predator class that exists outside of our government system, and it's here to oppress all of us.
Do you think that's the same predator class that executed 9/11?
100%. I mean, this is the same people.
Yeah.
Look, you look at 9/11, and you have yourself an international intelligence operation with players in the United States, players in Pakistan, players in Saudi Arabia, players in Israel, and then, you know, those in power throughout European nations that helped you cover up the whole thing and were on board with the war on terror. There's no doubt that's a predator class operation.
Right.
And whether it's the same exact players, who knows? But is it that same power structure that dictates that we have to use these crises for globalization and a new world order? Yes, it is those people, in my belief.
Right. So we're in it, like 9/11 was, it took like an hour, right? Is like the first plane struck at like 8:47 in the morning, and then the last plane crashed maybe like before 10 o'clock. So, and then we have, you know, years of just the follow through. It seems like the one thing was executed in no time. But in this case of this COVID crisis, which I liken to a 9/11, except for it doesn't seem to be one event. It seems to be just an ongoing like series of events. So, do you think that this is our 9/11? Like it's totally the same game plan to get to that end game of globalization and taking over of the people's rights.
Well, I've said that this is really more like 1929 meets 9/11 is COVID 1984, right? So you have this slow rollout economic collapse, and then you have this forever boogeyman that's invisible that can come back at any time. And you're not only gutting a little bit of the economy, you're gutting a large swath of the entire world or global economy, the system surrounding that, and you're instituting open surveillance through applications on phones, through the predominant operating systems, without the consent of anyone and the knowledge of most people. You know, if you updated your iOS device or your Apple device this week, yeah, that has the COVID tracer on it. It's built into the operating system. So this is very real. You know, whether you think that COVID-19 was real or not, its effects are going to be everlasting. And we need to be screaming and shouting and pushing back now and demanding that really people go to prison and not, you know, Trump for not acting. But those that are being propped up by the media with these solutions that nobody wants, like biometric IDs for travel everywhere, for having our stadiums. Listen, the bottom line is, even if this thing were 5 to 10 times as deadly as they're now saying it is, it's still not worth the solutions that they're providing, which really aren't any, because they haven't proved that the infection rate has gone down because of this social distancing nonsense.
Right. Yeah, and that's one of the things that's frustrating, is that these, like the mask. What do you think about these masks? These people, everywhere you go, you're shamed if you're not wearing a mask. You have people wearing masks. Everybody likes to talk about how there's masks on people by themselves in their car. You know, there's, or they're out there and they're just, you know, practically just walking through the park by themselves with their dog with a mask on. What do you think's going on with that? Why do you think they're compelling people to wear a mask? What's behind it?
Well, you know, again, if you were in New York City and you thought you were sick and you wanted to wear a mask voluntarily, whatever, I get it. You know, they could suggest it. But here in New York City, it's mandatory to go into the big box stores. I can't go into Walmart without it. I can't go into Walgreens without it. I can't go into Rite Aid without it. So I have to carry it around constantly. Small businesses have now been shamed online, even if they weren't enforcing it, via Yelp and Facebook and Instagram, et cetera, so that they have to enforce it. My local police chief refuses to wear one, good for him, or enforce any of this nonsense. But there are those that will. So, you know, among everything else, when you say that maybe we shouldn't be shaking hands at all anymore, and you're saying we should wear a mask and we need to be 6 feet apart, what you're really doing is you're pushing a transhumanist agenda where human beings are no longer supposed to cohabitate with one another. You're no longer supposed to be able to hug your neighbor or shake someone's hand when you meet them. And that's crazy to me. It's like a Demolition Man type comedy action thriller, only there's nothing funny or awesome about it. There's no Sylvester Stallone here to save the day, okay? So we've got to do it ourselves and say that this idea that you're going to reimagine all of society over a virus, no matter how deadly, is not only ludicrous, but those that are promoting those ideas via, say, an Event 201 exercise just before Johns Hopkins University, Davos, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the CDC out of China and out of the United States, NBC Universal, Johnson & Johnson, none of those institutions, the World Bank, none of them, World Health Organization, should be trusted. Instead, they should be distrusted and disbanded after they're investigated for corruption and cronyism and then put behind bars. Because these people are never concerned about you and I and our livelihoods. They're concerned about consolidating power and manipulating the market in their favor.
Right. Absolutely. That's what I've been saying. It's not, I mean, people like to say it's about money, but it's not about money. It's about being in the position of power. Now, money serves to get you there, but once you're there, it's just a matter of keeping the other guy down at that point. And it seems like they're there, and now they're just trying to keep the people down. Now, a lot of this is totally voluntary. Everything that, because I believe there's ways around the mask, for example, if you have a medical condition, and you could probably stand up and say, hey, I'm not going to wear the mask. But nobody seems to be doing that. And because their staff isn't overrun at this door with people saying, I'm not wearing a mask. And that people do choose to wear a mask and they go in, you know, that it perpetuates it. And so a lot of people will look at this like they're testing us. They're seeing how far they can push before people push back. But then there, it seems like people really aren't pushing back. Maybe some churches pushed back because of, claiming that churches weren't essential. And there's been some victory in the last week with churches being allowed to reopen and then governors saying, hey, no, you can't, and that back and forth. But what is it going to take? Do you think there's – let me just rephrase the question. Looking at the people and looking at society as a whole, are you – surprised by how many people are oblivious to this power play that's happening and how many people don't see what you and I see, that this is an agenda and that they're pushing forward to move forward with their agenda?
Not really. I mean, people are so damn brainwashed. They've already been, like, you know, worshiping a celebritard culture for some time, believing in left-right politics. You know, even those that are somewhat awoken to how corrupt this is, they identify as a conservative or a Republican or MAGA this or MAGA that. And they won't criticize Trump on what he's done in the Middle East. They won't mention Yemen. They won't talk about what's going on with Assange. They seem to still have these blind spots. So it's not that surprising to me that on the other side of the spectrum, those that have bought into the hardcore left and the Democratic Party and progressivism, that they aren't just cowing down to their leaders. And then you have, the factor that they've scared enough people, especially elderly people, that they're the ones that are enforcing a lot of the times, oh, you're going down the wrong aisle. Hey, this is a one way. Hey, it's not the people that work there. It's the 60-year-old man that's scared that he's going to lose his life. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, put that much fear in there. So, you know, I've said before, you know, the psychological warfare aspect of this is just as great as the technological warfare aspect.
Well, they go hand in hand. You can't do the technological warfare. You can't. They can't do what they've been doing if they haven't psychologically prepared the people. And it does. I'll admit that this is a pretty. I didn't. This came from left field. I knew of all the things that they want to do for years and. But it just seemed to kind of come out, like the degree that they've pushed this agenda with this one thing. And it seems like they're doing it shamefacedly. They're just moving right along. You know, they could drop their plans out on a, you know, in front of everybody this is our take over the world plan, you know, and then they stick it right back in their pocket and everybody acts like they didn't see it, you know? So, I wanted to ask you a couple questions about the 9/11 truth movement, because you won't get any of that anymore. You know, it's not like there's nothing rolling out. Everybody on the news, if you ask the news media, if you ask the main politicians today, like what happened on 9/11, they're going to say 19 hijackers with box cutters, stormed the cockpit of these airlines and they took down these two buildings and we got Osama bin Laden. But, you know, it seems like it's been almost, 19 years now, and nobody's really pushing that talk anymore. It seems like they won by just people kind of talking the thin air. Like everybody shouted it from the rooftops. There was a lot in the second part, or maybe the mid part of the 2000s, right, where people were really getting out there and all, like, loose change and all that stuff was coming out. When did that come out? 2006, 2005. So, you know, that's pretty much where it was the peak of it, where everybody was like waking up to it. But it seems like the movement, really, everybody's complacent about that. What happened to that movement?
Well, I think that, you know, they co-opted it. When I say they, I mean the media in a lot of ways. And you, for instance, you look at the original Tea Party, right? Like the Tea Party Republicans, the Ron Paul Republicans, even the Tea Party started out as 9/11 truth in 2006. Anybody can look it out. I attended an event in 2007. That was the real Tea Party. And then they made it into like a right-wing Republican thing. Even when We Are Change was blowing up, the next presidential candidate, what was he about? Hope and change. And everybody was like, well, we got to trust this guy, right? I mean, he's coming at it. He's a young guy. He seems like he's anti-war. He says he's going to shut down Guantanamo Bay. And then on top of that, they took, you know, the 9/11 truth movement, and they took the word truth and they made truther as the new quote unquote conspiracy theorist term, the new hip one where they went after you. And now, you know, they associated the term truther with what? Flat earth, crisis actors, just about anything wacky you can imagine. So now Truther gets discredited. They're not interested in real journalism. If you look at, for instance, Omar Saeed Sheikh, he was recently supposed to be killed because he was involved in the murder of Daniel Pearl, the original beheading fear video. Well, he was also the guy that facilitated the wire payment between General Mahmoud Ahmed, the Pakistani ISI chief, of $100,000 to Mohammed Atta. And General Mahmoud Ahmed was meeting with Porter Goss and Bob Graham on the morning of 9/11, had met with Condoleezza Rice and George Tenet before that, and even met with Joe Biden, who's running for president. Joe Biden got on TV and bragged about his meeting with this guy, as he was the first or second most powerful man in Pakistan. Now, Omar Saeed Sheikh, now a man that facilitated money for 9/11 via Pakistan, and it was covered up, and the guy that supposedly, again, facilitated the murder of Daniel Pearl, he was released because he's an intelligence asset. And no one will even touch that on Biden, just like they won't touch the multitude of videos where he's inappropriately touching children, or they won't touch the fact that he's visibly senile. That's how much disrespect the predator class has for us, that they will put out an establishment hack that is literally manhandling children on video and can barely speak gibberish.
Yeah, it's that psychological operation. Like, something's, maybe it's just goes all the way back to public education, or maybe it's just coming through the TV screen where people are just, their ability to think rationally and to see these types of things, or it just, it's right in front of them and they just can't see. It's like their eyes are blinded when they see. Or if somebody presents to them, hey, did you know about this third building on 9/11, that there's another building that fell? And, you know, that would be enough. But I suppose there's just this thing that somehow they've gotten into people's minds in such a way where they, like, there's like a carnal, like almost a visceral, they don't touch it. It's like there's a part of their mind, like, don't go there at all. It's like there's a big wall there, and you can't – like, the truth is on the other side of it, and if something's calling from the other side of that wall, they don't want to go anywhere near it. And it seems like there's some kind of programming that just happens. It's a human thing that they've totally capitalized on. Is there a 9/11 truth movement now?
Well, I'll tell you what. Dylan Avery is about to release Seven, the documentary film – not only on the collapse of Building 7, but the Fairbanks, Alaska study that is showing that it could not have fallen due to damage and fire. So we'll see what happens with that film. I really hope that it makes its way around the internet. Unfortunately, we live in a time that anything that goes against the status quo that begins to go viral, it's instant cancel culture. We've seen that with Plandemic. But I'm certainly not shutting up about 9/11. It is the quintessential event that all of our foreign and domestic policy is basically still based on, and the one that they invoke time and time again in order to spy on American citizens and use authoritarian means overseas without any restrictions whatsoever, including unaccounted for drone bombings of innocent women and children.
Yeah, and we're having Richard Gage on the program on Saturday, so I can't wait for that interview. But have you seen the film yet, Jason?
I've not seen the film yet, although I imagine before it's released, Dylan will get at me and give me a copy. We did an interview on it, I think, a couple weeks back where we were talking about the release, and he was hoping it was going to be out before June 1st, but here we are.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that always kind of happens when you make a film. It takes a little longer than you think. Is it done, or is it he's still kind of tinkering away at it?
Understand, it was pretty much done. I think there was a couple audio mixes that he was hoping to get permission for, but as far as the film being edited, it was pretty solid and done from what he told me last time.
Awesome. Yeah, and you guys, if you're wondering, we're talking with Jason Burmes. He is the director that brought us Loose Change, and he brought us Fabled Enemies, Invisible Empire, Shade, the motion picture. And so if you haven't yet seen those films, make sure to check out his YouTube channel. He has a lot of great things over there. Jason, the website is, it's Jason Justice 9/11, or what is the...
No. If you want to follow me on YouTube, it's youtube.com/InfoWarrior. If you want to check me out over at Rockfin, it's ROKFIN.com/Jason Burmes, or over on Twitter at Jason Bermas. It's B-E-R-M-A-S. All my stuff is free. So if you do check me out over on YouTube, where I've been fully demonetized, hopefully they don't kick me off altogether. But if you go in the documentaries playlist section, all those films are available for free.
Yeah, which is a little frustrating for me because, you know, I want to sell your films, but it's like just to find them is impossible on DVD.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, right?
Yeah, well, I love Invisible Empire. It's one of my favorite films on the topic of New World Order and all that. I know all those clips that you found are just... They're clips that I never even heard of when I watched that film. How much research did you put into that, making that film?
Hundreds of hours. That film was the culmination of something that I had been talking about from Loose Change and even before Fabled Enemies, that I wanted to do my big picture NWO film. And I wanted to show people that, well, this is a term that, you know, the Predator class and their minions use. And this is a term that's rooted in history, even, you know, pre-Hitler. And, you know, Hitler had his own vision of this. But, you know, there's a guy named Samuel Zane Batten in the late 1800s, early 1900s, that had his own vision of this. But the common theme through this vision is one of collectivism and authoritarianism and globalism, no matter what flavor it comes. And, you know, I just thought that I would use the tools that were available to me at the time. I scoured the internet. I used the Vanderbilt Library and the C-SPAN Library to find, you know, as many times as I could where the terminology was being talked about. And I think that I, you know, wove together a pretty, you know, I would say enlightening piece where you look at this and you're like, all right, well, okay, so this isn't just crazy people talking about the New World Order. This is truly that make policy and, you know, are standing by this terminology no matter what you think it believes. So, you know, I love that film. It was kind of like my coup de grace at the time. But now I look at Shade the Motion Picture with everybody looking at Bill Gates, and I'm like, you know, I had large sections on Bill Gates in Shade the Motion Picture 7 years ago. People need to go check that out as well.
Yeah. Well, you made that film with Alex Jones. What was that process like working with him?
Well, Jones, you know, he also produced Fabled Enemies. So it was me doing Fabled Enemies with him and then Invisible Empire. You know, I say on Invisible Empire, you know, there were long nights where we stayed up and we watched cuts and we went through the script for sure. But for the most part, you know, other than a few, you know, edits that he wouldn't let me put in there, he wouldn't let me put Donald Duck and his New World Order song in there because he was scared of being sued by Disney. There were a couple moments like that, yeah.
Well, he's probably right about that, actually.
Yeah,
in retrospect,
I didn't want to put it in there. I thought, you know, we could get away with it, and I was like, Jones, even if they sue us, it would be great publicity. But
yeah.
But at the time, you know, it was a good time. You know, I look back at those times mostly fondly. Back in the day when we were, you know, grinding through these documentaries on top of being on the air.
Yeah. So did you work on that film in the studio, or were you just working out of your house during making that?
No, actually both of them. So when I did Fabled Enemies, I was out in Austin for 3 months, and this is before he had the big studio that is even bigger today. But when I came back to do Invisible Empire, that's when he got the old AMD studios and started expanding, and he gave me the InfoWarrior show, and I was the first person that he had ever given a show to on the InfoWars network. So I was doing that at the same time I was his stand-in host and I was making this film. So, you know, they were exciting times.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to give you back to Dustin. I just had a few of those questions that I kind of was curious about, you know, because I make films as well. And so, yeah, I just appreciate what you're doing, man. Here's Dustin.
Jason, I got a question from our chat. Is asking if you can get in touch with Dr. Judy Wood. I don't know how relevant that is to you.
No, it's just the biggest troll stuff when I hear the Judy Wood name. It comes up every single time, you know?
I don't know what it means because I'm not – I don't know.
Judy Wood is the one that comes up with the directed energy weapons hypothesis.
Is that the no planes?
She's also a no-planer.
Okay, that's one of my other questions that are kind of coming up. So,
Yeah, and that's the thing. There, you know, there are people in my chat who, you know, are fans of the show, and I always say, listen, Dr. Judy Wood, you know, went with the no plane thing with Nico Haupt. I'm not saying that I know exactly how those towers went down. I don't believe they came down due to fire, but I do know that the no plane stuff is garbage and discredited. And, you know, everybody wants you to talk about stuff that can easily be disproven. Let's say she was right about the directed energy weapons. It would be easy to disprove her on the no planes theory. And, you know, if you say no planes were used on 9/11, you're still going to get a vast majority of people saying you're crazy and just discrediting every single thing you said and not talking about the Pakistani role and the Biden cover up and some of the more important issues out there. So, you know, these people that want to bring up Judy Wood, or they want to say that I got the Pentagon wrong and we never repented, or I've never reported on the Israeli involvement in 9/11 and somehow covered that up, they're the same exact things people have now been saying for literally almost 15 years.
So you're an expert on the day, 9/11, September 11th, 2001. What do you think hit the Pentagon that day?
It's a good question. I highly doubt it was Flight 77.
Uh-huh.
Same time, you know, was it a missile? Was it a drone with a missile? Was it possibly 77 being remotely controlled in there? I suspect that it was due to the cover of these drills going that morning. I think there's a good possibility that the planes that were used to hit the towers and whatever was blown apart over Shanksville, Pennsylvania, were also not the commercial airliners that were supposedly hijacked. I think basically everybody involved is dead one way or another. And other than that, I really don't want to speculate. I'd say that if you look at those drills that morning and you see that they had a multitude of hijackings going from different places, if you see the fact they were running drills at a Cheyenne Mountain that didn't stop until 20 minutes after Flight 93 went down, if you see that Delta 1989 was reported with a bomb on board, that they had hijackings out of Alaska, there's so much that's been covered up. If you see that they were prepared for this prior to 9/11 via the drill Amalgam Virgo, where they had Osama bin Laden on the cover and they were going to have a hijacking come in and hit the Capitol building, you know, all of their arguments fall apart under scrutiny.
So the argument for, because I've never looked into this no plane theory, right? So I know we've seen the video of some guys and they're down on the ground, and I don't know if, I forget, man. It's been so long since I really got into it. Once I determined it was an inside job, you know, I kind of scoured through so much of it, but then, you know, you kind of get on with it. And I think I'm one of those people guilty of not following up or, you know, perpetuating the story of the truth of what happened on 9/11 because there's so much chaos around it. But so this idea that no planes hit the buildings, does that mean that the weren't there eyewitnesses that saw planes? So wouldn't that, or isn't there video from many angles?
Videos outside of the media. You had videos from handy cams across the way. There's no doubt that planes hit those buildings. It wasn't a holographic media projection. It wasn't Westcam. I hear that sometimes. It wasn't green screen. It wasn't, blue screen. A lot of people, you know, point to the nose out videos and things like that. Again, I don't know exactly what planes hit those buildings, but it's pretty evident to me that planes hit those buildings.
Well, yeah, and here's the other thing. It's the same thing with the virus. It doesn't even really matter if they have the technology to create a bioweapon or whether they have the technology to do some sort of thing where everybody believes this is something that happened. Everything that follows is the event. You know, it's like it wasn't as much the buildings coming down, which is what they were. They could care less about whether those buildings were standing the next day. It was all about the operation to follow. So they don't really care what kind of virus they're dealing with. I don't think. I think it's more about their operation. Now, I just had a thought come into my mind, and I just want to kind of turn the wheel a little bit. Have you heard of Operation Bluebeam?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people talk about Bluebeam, but there's not a lot of evidence behind it. So mm-hmm. I'm not saying that Bluebeam doesn't exist. For those that don't know what it is, part of it is to fake an alien invasion, but another is to not only project the voice, but the beings of deities around the world, different regions would see different deities through holographic projection. But if you really look into that, the information comes from a professor who was giving a speech up in Canada. I forget what university it was, and I've been unable to find any hard documentation on that program. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist, but it does mean that in order to really talk about it in any intellectual manner, you have to go off of more than just one researcher's word on it.
Right. So I personally would not be surprised if you know, if there was an alien invasion, I wouldn't believe it was an alien invasion. You know, I believe that they would use that type of thing, but I don't know how they could create that kind of perspective. But at the same time, I'm just surprised because I feel like we're dealing with these intelligence agencies are next to sorcerers. You know, they want to present pictures and to people where people, you know. It's like Disney magic. If you look at Mary Poppins, you know, she's, you know, somehow on the stage and she's, you know, descending down and it's just an umbrella and she pulls out the coat rack out of her book and nobody knows how it's done. So I see a lot of the intelligence agencies, they present a certain picture and their objective is to spin a narrative to be able to move forward with their operations. So I don't know what kind of technology they use. They're clearly, what do you think about them in Hollywood? And do you think it's the CIA behind the news stories bringing all these things together? Do you have any opinion about intelligence in the news?
Intelligence agency and the intelligence agencies in general have manipulated the media for a very, very long time. Operation Mockingbird. You look at the Central Intelligence Agency just using front companies to buy up land for Disney. And now Disney is literally the most powerful and largest company out there globally. It's in control of Fox. It's in control of Marvel. It's in control of not only the wide array of Disney characters, but Star Wars as well. I mean, you couldn't get a larger monolith out there. That's the thing. People want to talk about some of these entities as like private organizations or private companies, and they can do what they want, but they're anything but. They're pseudo-government fascistic agencies that are guised as companies. Just like Disney is there for entertainment, and you know Hollyweird is there and being influenced by the Central Intelligence Agency, but it's also being influenced in NGOs, non-government organizations. You know, that's why you had films like Outbreak and Contagion, you know, that basically predictively programmed people for an event like this, because these narratives are put out by establishment scientists, establishment media personalities that are doing so at the behest of an agenda set by a predator class. So, you know, I don't even see it as the CIA anymore. I mean, you look now and the CIA usually keeps its hands pretty clean by using third-party organizations, whether it's Stratfor, the Kissinger Institute, Black Cube, right? Or Booz Allen Hamilton that Edward Snowden was working for. So, you know, we've built what's really a national security state in America, wrapped in the guise of freedom, because we don't have checks and balances in this country anymore. And when populism rises up, the predator class does everything to calm it down, squash it, and eviscerate it, whether it be in Hong Kong protesting against China, or it be the yellow vests in France protesting against the European Union and the oligarchs there. And, you know, it's going to take a global movement of people coming out in the streets and saying enough is enough and holding billionaires accountable and not jail accountable. You know, like if they're going to prison, they're not going to prison on their terms to some country club. No, we're talking about real Rikers Island style, no frills, no benefits, doesn't matter what your money has, prison. And you know what? They're so big on surveillance, that should be – you know, the pay-per-view channel or the public access channel for everybody. So I can tune in at 3 a.m. and watch Jamie Dimon and Dick Cheney crying in their little small jail cells for the crimes against humanity that they've committed.
So do you think, because that's what it's going to take. It's going to take some sort of public outcry to say, hey, enough is enough. You mentioned that movie, those movies, Outbreak and Contagion. I think maybe that's to answer our question before. I think that's why people are wearing the mask, because they've seen it played out on these movies. And it seems like the role was laid out for them, and they just kind of, it's like their school clothes were laid out the night before. They just wake up and then bang, they it's already prepared for them, and they know their part. They're not the hero looking for the vaccine. They're the one waiting for the vaccine, wearing the mask, being locked down and in quarantine. They know their role in the movie. They're not the hero. And so people will naturally play into that. And that's something that I think they've laid out for us. And I believe that it's, like you said, the internationalist, the international intelligence community, and they work together. You know, we like to think that, you know, the Great Britain and America and the Soviet Union and China, that there's so many differences between these nations, but their intelligence communities are sharing information and plans and game plans, you know, all along. But talking about like people pushing back, like, do any of these movies have people pushing back? Like, because, like, are they going to co-opt the resistance? You know, is that something that you expect them to do? Because you imagine, like, even with the Event 201, they had talked about people resisting and people on the internet and people coming out, the truthers showing you who's behind the vaccine and all of this. It's like they've expected certain elements to arise as a result of their actions. So, you know, do you think they're trying to push people? It's like they're inflicting pain, backing off, bringing in some pain, backing off, because they're moving forward inch by inch. They're stretching people out, and so if people push back, do you think it could be like a co-opted pushback where they can now come forth with what they really want to do? You know, they've done it for decades. You know, they put their agent provocateurs into the situation, and then they create the response so they can stomp it. What do you think? What do you think of the likelihood, or do you see that as part of their game plan?
Again, you know, they've executed very well over the past several decades. No one's pushed back on 9/11 hard enough. No one pushed back on weapons of mass destruction hard enough. No one pushed back on even no chemical attack in Syria in 2018. No one's pushing back right now with Julian Assange. And now, as people's pensions have been gutted, as their 401ks have been eviscerated, as their rights no longer exist, as their businesses have been taken away from them, as their pay has been basically cut for the most part. Right now, again, people that were not essential and that are making more money, they're loving it. They're like, wow, this is the greatest thing ever. You know, people that ran a business for 25 years and went from making anywhere from $2,000 to $10,000 a week, maybe even more, that are now making nothing and they can't pay their mortgages, they're the ones hurting, the real entrepreneurs, the real people that make this economy run so well, the heart of this country. And again, I think this is about letting human beings know that they're worthless, that transhumanism is inevitable. We will have to merge with machines and AI. Automation Nation is coming, and that you can, you know, don't worry, you'll be able to upload your consciousness. I mean, this whole idea of overpopulation that have been pushed for decades is disturbing to me. Even in my region of upstate New York, you know, I drive around here and it's not overpopulated at all, not even close. And that's most of the country. That's most of the world. And yet the predator class wants to make you think there aren't enough resources for everybody, because the more people there are, the harder it is to control them. And they know at some point the dam will break and the people will come for them like they did for Mussolini during World War II. And good things did not happen to Mussolini and his cronies. I can promise you that.
So, Jason, we're going to have to let you go. But before you go, Automation Nation, is that the name of your next film?
Not yet, but I've definitely been talking about the Automation Nation, because it's something that this is preparing you for. You know, again, that's what distance learning is, telehealth, all that. Johnny nonsense, it's to get you ready to not really be at a workplace and be subservient to a universal basic income that is going to come with all sorts of strings attached, I promise you.
Right. I feel like the end game is for people to sell themselves into slavery and to get some benefits for their basic allowances. You know, they're going to they're going to sign a deal, and it's going to cost them way more than they'll ever get back. Jason, do you have anything in the works? What's any projects coming up for you?
I'm about to hit the road. Right. Hopefully, you know, I'm going to visit all these different areas. I'm going to film there, and I'm going to find a new place to live. So that's basically what I'm in the works on now, and we'll see what happens after all this. You know, I'm continuing to do it 3 to 7 times a day until they kick me off of YouTube, and even then, you know, I triple stream. I stream to Twitch at the same time now, even though Twitch hasn't been the best platform for me. But I'm also on Periscope. I'm sorry. I upload to Rockfin. I'm on Mines. No matter what, I'm not going anywhere, and I'm going to continue to put real news out there, real documents, and try to give a take that is beyond this kind of left-right paradigm that I really believe entraps people.
That's awesome. It's good to see you just branching out and just putting that information out there for people to find. If there is the best place for people to reach you or to find you, is it just dropping Jason Burmis into Google, or where would we find you?
Twitter.com/Jason Burmis, YouTube.com/InfoWarrior.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us again. It was a pleasure talking with you. We really appreciate your point of view and your experience and knowledge on these matters. And we hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, Jason.
All right. Thanks again.
Hey, thanks, Jason. Appreciate it.
Thank you.